Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to get to your phone calls in just a minute. But before we do, Saturday, August 25th, 2018. That's right. That's 3.5 weeks away. It's George Norrie Live, the return to Asheville. And now he's going to have David Adair there, Micah Hanks, William Forstgen, Joshua P. Warren, Vincent Jenna, a live band, audience participation, and a meet and greet after the show. And rumor has it that Micah Hanks is going to sing Simply Red. Yeah, most people don't know this, but it's Micah Hanks that's singing on that track. It's not Simply Red. And there you go. But you'll have to go to the return in Asheville to go and find out for yourself. And it's over in the events section of Coast to Coast AM. Tickets and info are right there. All right. Our guest tonight on this Sunday evening is Barrett Brown. I am your host, Jimmy Church. And when we come back, we're going to take your phone calls. Barrett's been looking forward to this now for a couple of weeks. So, Barrett, get ready. You're going to help me man the phones right after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight, Barrett Brown. And now we're going to jump into some phone calls. And, Barrett, you've been looking forward to this. You were like, man, let's do this.
I love this.
I know. Isn't it great? Okay. Now, look, unscreened. We're just going to fly through this.
Good.
Let's do it. All right. First up, first-time caller line. Let's go to William in Ridgeway, Virginia. William, you're first up on Coast to Coast.
Jimmy Church, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, William.
Yeah, thank you, George Norris, greatest guest host. Anyway, earlier you had said something about the world's just going crazy. Nobody's trying to get a grip on it. And it's scary. It's scary times. And to your guest, I commend him. Well, I commend you, too, for your work, the work you do. But I commend him for the work he's done, the 4 years in prison. Wow, man. But it's scary times. And I was just wondering how he felt about the future. Is Donald Trump going to be able to make America great again? Is things going to get good? Is it just going to be a big dream that turns into a big nightmare?
Yeah, there you go, William. Thank you so much. And, you know, I don't do politics on the show, Barrett. But I do the conspiracy of politics for sure. But to directly address what William was talking about, what do you think about the future of this planet? Are we going to get back together and cut out the divisiveness and maybe wake up and mature?
No. There will be a, I think, broadly, a continued deterioration of the sort that we've seen the last couple of years. You know, obviously, I was away for a lot of this sudden increase in this civic deterioration. I was away, and so getting out after being in prison from 2012 to late 2016, right after the election,
right,
you come out and you see there's these leftover sort of hangover from the election where you have this very visceral, very tribalist conflict going on among several different sides, you know, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Trump, you know, and then miscellaneous on top of that. And regardless of which candidate one would have preferred, there is a remarkable degree. You see this on Twitter mostly, but you can see it in any aspect of American life now. A remarkable degree of disingenuousness, of tribalism, of an environment in which nuance cannot exist easily.
No, it, you know what, Barrett? It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't have to be right. Politics. It could be religion. It could be sports. It could be children's socks. It doesn't matter. If I post on Facebook that I enjoy chocolate, somebody will just wrote, "What are you talking about, man? I'm unfriending you. You're out of your mind." It's like, wait a minute. How do
someone who has who will bring up the conditions under which chocolate is produced.
Right.
Someone else will talk about the ecological effect of it. And some of them will have great points, but very few of them will be ready to put the brakes on. Very few of them will stop that conflict before it comes to the knife.
And I mean, it was
a constant war to the knife over everything.
How did we get here so quickly? Like you said, you were away for 4 years. And you know, five, and you get out, and it's a different place. How did it happen so quickly?
Well, I should ask you, I guess, because I want to hear. But having said, look, I think the conditions for this were dormant. They were extant.
Right.
In the conditions before I went to prison, despite a lot of the happy talk we got, you know, and continue to get from the people, the producers, the TV presenters, the cable news people, about this being, you know, ultimately one nation with radio in common fundamentally, that just hasn't been true. It was never true. I mean, we've had a civil war before. We have had, you know, we have individual states for a reason, and some of those are perhaps not good reasons, but from the very beginning, we were a fractured entity. We were not, you know, the states came before the federal government. And the federal government, of course, the Constitution was an effort to bring those states into some framework that they could live together with. And you know, in Alexander Hamilton's vision, you know, in particular, become create a powerful central entity. But, you know, this is we are fundamentally many, many different people on this large portion of the North American continent. And there's no reason there's no reason to believe that the civics that we're taught in school and then the whatever commonality of political culture that we are presented with, that's always going to work, that's always going to be enough to keep us united.
And you wrote about this, you warned about this. And here we are. How does it feel to be right?
Rarely good. I mean, it's always nice. I'm not going to lie. I love saying I told you so about things.
Of course.
I do it all the time. I've never been shy about my arrogance. But, you know, unfortunately, being a pessimist, you don't want to be right. You know, but having said that, you know, all these fractures, when they become visible, when they become apparent, that does always provide an opportunity to correct them. You know, it's easier for someone like me to come out at the end of 2016 and say, okay, now once again, I'm putting together a project, a framework for, you know, collaboration. And I know you guys, some of you a few years ago thought that was not necessary, that our institutions had things well in hand and under control. But now that you know you're wrong, let's give this another look.
Right. That's exactly the point. Okay, I'm going to give you the choice. You've been listening to Coast to Coast for years and years, so you're going to get to do the call right now. East or west of the Rockies, Barrett?
Let's do west.
Go west of the Rockies. Let's go to Sky in Pagosa Springs, Colorado. Sky, welcome to Coast.
Yo, what's good, Jimmy? Hey, I love your late night AM style, man. You ask the most pertinent questions. When you're quarterbacking Coast, I always listen, man.
Thank you so much, Sky. Say hi to Barrett.
What's up, Barrett?
What's up, Sky?
So I did time with you in Fort Worth Federal Correctional Institution.
Oh, shit.
You probably remember me. I used to run with, like, Saxon, Rhea, Red, Jr.
Oh, Redbone.
Steve Trahanis.
Oh, Trahanis. Oh, shit, yeah.
Okay, Barrett, you got to...
Sorry.
That's okay.
I got into inmate mode real quick there.
Man,
I'm glad to hear you're out.
I'm glad to hear you out too, man. That's good.
Yeah, no doubt, man, no doubt.
Okay, Sky, let me ask you a question. Since you listened to me on late night radio, what was Barrett like in prison?
Man, so Barrett was like, he was like the intellectual, man. He was wild popular too. There would be mail call, right? And Barrett would get called like every other name. He would have a pile of mail. You know, he was like the people's champion inside. You know.
So like, the amount of mail
against our man, though, they like to pull him over. So like the prison guards, they knew what he was in for. They knew what he was about, and they would stop him. We'd be walking randomly. And they would just stop him, search him. You know, what you got on you? What you got on you? When they should have been searching myself, Steve, Saxon, they should have been searching all of us.
Yeah, they should have been all over you.
They would just hit him. And he was in the SHU. Shoot, I think I did like 8 months with him, and six of which he was in the hole.
So SHU is the segregated housing unit?
Yeah, solitary confinement.
Solitary confinement. Barrett, you did 6 months in solitary in the hole?
Altogether, yes. There was two-month stretches and then a couple of 2 or 3 week stretches, yeah.
Oh, man. I have no comment. I mean, how do I respond to that? But, you know, and I think of, like, Steve McQueen, you know, and going back to, you know, being isolated for so long. Now, when you're in the hole, are you by yourself?
It depends on the institution. Mostly no these days in the feds because they don't have enough space. They throw people in the shoe pretty frequently. And so to keep suicides at a minimum, they by policy, they try to pair you with another inmate. Now, there's other places, you know, like the AMX, the one in Colorado, where you are forever in this cell by yourself. And there's, you know, but solitary is actually fairly rare in the federal system these days, again, because of space constraints and all that. I generally almost always had an inmate. The only time I was really by myself was for 10 days early on. It's mostly, you know, the solitary is still a major practice in the U.S. And it's something that, you know, just a few years ago, you know, the executive branch had to ban solitary for teenagers. That was something they actually had to do in like 2015, just to say we will not put children in solitary confinement in our jails. But for the most part, it's just, you know, it's a means of punishment, obviously. It's a means of retaliation. I was most of the time I spent in the shoe was on, quote, investigation, unquote. And that was true. I think if I remember this guy properly, he was one of the couple guys that I spoke to through the door drills. You know, you're all in a hallway and you could speak and shout back and forth, blah, blah. I think I met him afterwards and he was in there as a mistake. And his family's out there trying to correct it for months and months. And it's just, that's the sort of thing that can happen, again, when there's no due process, when there's no real dependable due process in a country, and when you have an institution within that country that has no negative feedback, that has no mechanisms, really,
right,
for, you know, dealing with those things.
Hey, Sky, thank you for the phone call, and I'm glad you were able to say hello to Barrett.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, I got one question for him, though.
Sure.
I was wondering, what obscure topics are you currently most concerned with, Barrett?
Yeah, I'm still kind of interested in those same intelligence contracting, espionage, private propaganda, software, persona management, those things. But just like back then, you know, I had a chance to do a lot of learning, a lot of reading back then, and a lot of you know, learning from other inmates as well. And I got more interested in things that are not necessarily practical, but that help. I think improve your mind, like things that won't help you win an argument, but that make you more of a human being. And that's, you know, things like poetry, you know, things that I'd never regarded before. Having said that, you're asking specifically really more about issues, I think. And, you know, my main interest right now is in the ways in which a entity, a government, an institution that seems very solid, that seems eternal, can collapse from within.
And they all fall.
They all fall.
They all do. Hey, Sky, thank you so much.
Hey, no doubt, man. Have a lovely night.
You too. Good,
Sky, man.
All right, man.
Good to talk to you.
That surprised me.
The funny thing is I just heard from another inmate that I did time with at another place just a few minutes ago on Twitter. It's great to it's nice to talk to these people.
Yeah. So you went west. I'm going to go east. Jerry, he's a trucker in Iowa, and we love our truckers here. Jerry, welcome to Coast.
Thank you. I have one question. And like you said, I'm a trucker. I'm from Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a wife and 5 kids, and I'm a Strat 4 subscriber. So I had my information released, and I had money stolen from my bank account, and then I had the 911 spoofing where the cops actually, one time when they showed up, they bashed down my door, and they had their guns out, had the kids screaming in hysterics because they didn't know who was going to shoot them. My question for your guest is, why did you do that to me and my family?
He didn't. I don't believe.
Okay, I'll answer the question.
Okay, go ahead, Barrett.
The answer is that I didn't, and that is pretty demonstrably the case. You can go back and look at what I wrote after the hack.
You had nothing to do with the Strat 4 release of the information to Anonymous.
Okay, but I'm not sure what it had to do with. But it was not something I did. Obviously, I would have been. It would have been brought up in my case if I'd done anything like that. The FBI has.
So you just spent the $800,000 and gave it to Strat 4 for no reason.
That's an unusual reading of the situation. I have not heard that. No, I'd never had $800,000. $800,000 is what I was ordered to pay by a judge after prosecuting the FBI, which oversaw that hack, which let that hack happen, which I could not have stopped if I wanted to, which I didn't.
Yeah, Jerry, I think you've misunderstood the entire situation.
He was nowhere involved.
No, I was involved, but not in the stuff you're talking about. Now, if you think I was, you should write it down and make it public. And accuse me publicly and tell me what the details are, and I will respond. My Twitter is BarrettBrown_.
You have nothing to do with Anonymous.
No, that's not what I said. I was involved with Anonymous. That's public knowledge.
Anonymous released my information, stole money out of my bank account, and had the cops showing up my house because of the fake 911 calls, because they released all the 911, all the information from Strat 4.
And you're based on your unusual conception of what happened with Stratfor and me.
My conception?
Of Stratfor, yeah. I don't think you know enough about the situation to really know what happened to you. I don't know what happened to you. I don't know who was involved. Anonymous involved a lot of people.
Okay.
I was not in charge of it.
Right. Jerry, send Barrett a tweet. It's very simple. And
let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And send your full name.
Yeah, and playing this out on the air, you know.
Don't make accusations on the radio unless you're willing to put your name to it.
Yeah, it's well, I think he misunderstood, and also, anyway, let's just move on. Let's go to Wild Card. Do I have enough time for one phone call? You know what? I don't. No, I don't. I've only got a minute left, so we'll pick up the phone calls after the break. But Barrett.
That was exciting. See, that's why I like these phone calls.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And see, and this is the thing. When information now is leaked, or you even have doxing or personal stuff that is getting out there, it was never like this before anywhere. And your personal information is as vulnerable as anything else out there, and you've got to protect it, don't you?
Mine's compromised years ago. My Social Security number was found by some of these contractors and put out, and I've had some issues with that I've had to deal with. Actually, my mom had to deal with a lot of it because I was in prison, and there was a guy using my Social Security number as a Florida telemarketer to get tax something or other. I had to pay $2,000 to the IRS for this guy because they wouldn't take our explanation that, no, I was in prison. In your prison during that time, I was not working as a Florida telemarketer. You know, so I sympathize with the guy to the extent whatever happened to him happened, but what he was saying didn't make sense. I have a hard time believing that the Strapper thing, it seemed like he was jumping from thing to thing.
I know, Barrett. We've got to take a break right here. This is Coast to Coast AM Special Sunday Night with Barrett Brown. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. NASA's operational land imager aboard Landsat 8 recently captured an image of a gigantic swirling phytoplankton bloom in the Baltic Sea's Gulf of Finland. If you haven't seen these images, go to coasttocoastam.com, and it's right there on the homepage. It's a massive whirlpool of algae, larger than Manhattan Island. Now, in this image, you can go and check it out at coasttocoastam.com. There is a ship off to the left. And when you look at the ship and you see how big it is, then you will see how big this whirlpool is. Because this ship is a pixel. You need to go and check it out. There's no explanation right now for what's causing this. And it's going to be developing into a pretty major story here. And we're going to stay on top of it here at Coast to Coast. I am your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, Sunday, it is Barrett Brown. And he's helping me man the phones until the end of this program. It's going to get good. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I've been standing in all weekend, and I've had just the most amazing time. And I've been looking forward to Bear Brown being with us. And tonight we've covered just about everything. Anonymous and prison and journalism and internet privacy and hacking and censorship. And before we get out of here tonight, we're also going to talk about the Pursuance Project and disclosure with the New York Times and what they released back in December 16th, 2017. But Barrett, I've got a lot of phone calls here that are waiting, so I'm going to give it to you. Where do you want to go? You want to go first time, east or west?
I always go west.
Always the west.
Go west, young man.
Go west, young man. Let's go to Joseph in Monterey, California. Joseph, you're up next.
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen. I called yesterday. It was a good show. Maybe you remember me, Joe.
Okay, Joe. Yeah, Joe. We go way back. How you doing?
Yes, at least 24 hours.
Okay.
For your guest, I know he knows how to collect information and look at it and understand it. I've been watching. Chemtrails and a lot of different associate things. And if you link up chemtrails, Morgellons disease, transhumanism, you will see where it leads to. And it's quite frightening, chemtrails leading into nanotechnology and Morgellons disease, which is very much ridiculed. Is fibers growing out of people's bodies?
Okay. Right. Well, what's your question for Barrett?
Well, is there any unity as far as in all of this that leads to an undercurrent of conspiracy in many different areas of society?
Right. I'm glad you asked that because, and this is something I haven't spoken about. But it is something that did come up years ago when we brushed up against Booz Allen Hamilton, and we spoke to somebody, and I can talk about this because the FBI knows, they know who we talked to. I had not heard of any of this until 2011, and we were directed by somebody who we approached, someone we approached based on these stolen emails, and we knew at that point some employees at Booz Allen Hamilton. This is a guy who had left Booz Allen Hamilton and moved on to some other company and was willing to speak to us. And we were asking him originally about these meetings between Aaron Barr and one of the vice presidents of Booz Allen Hamilton regarding this unspecified campaign against WikiLeaks and Anonymous, which I mentioned briefly earlier. And he told us about some other stuff. And he told us to look at a few documents that were actually publicly available, including patents. And the chemtrail thing, which, in my view, was an early experiment in geoengineering done between the U.S. government and the British government and perhaps other entities. That is something that is demonstrably real. What it is exactly, that's a subject for debate. But there were, and this, I'm interested in this because I'm interested in the ways in which, because of our heuristics and the heuristics of producers and editors, and so the ways we evaluate information without really looking at it closely, the way we dismiss things or accept things based on our notions of what is appropriate, what's dignified, what's professional, what's real. Obviously, a lot of producers and editors are not equipped to evaluate those things, to evaluate what is outlandish and what is not, because they're not even aware of the things that we now, that the U.S. government now admits to in the past. You know, in St. Louis, they dropped chemical agents on the entire city to test the wind flows and all the effects of these things, and that came out, you know, years ago. And that's something a lot of people who should be aware of that are not, just not aware of. So there clearly was a program, probably starting in 1996, probably involving patents that Hughes Aircraft had. And Hughes Aircraft, if I'm remembering correctly, was purchased by, I think, Raytheon in the 90s at some point. So there are patents that show that there is something involving, I guess, barium and aluminum particulate
Right.
And there's just so much documentation about this. I mean, there are local news programs in which, when this was at its height, they went out and they did tests under these areas. This is, you know, a lot of this is done in California, a lot of it was done in Texas, you know, found that there were high levels of barium and aluminum particulate. And in at least one instance, they called the military, and the military said, yeah, this is a program we have. It's no big deal. And that was it. And so the fact that this has not gotten traction, despite that, it's very relevant to my interests. Regardless of whether or not I care that much about the program itself, and it's certainly an interesting program, and it's probably the reason it would be secret would have to do with the fact that what they're doing is potentially harmful to those directly beneath the area of operation.
Of course.
But it probably has to do with experimenting regarding geoengineering, and we know that, we're pretty sure of that, because those same things have been discussed publicly in conferences. And it's just one of those things that has always bothered me, because...
Well, as a journalist and somebody who is out there listening to different conspiracy theories or conspiracy theorists over time,
right,
and you hear about chemtrails, and yes, I can see editors and news directors dismissing it, and possibly even you yourself. But when you go and see the disclosure happen like that, and you're reading the evidence of it, that's when you probably step back and went, oh, this is real. These people aren't crazy. This is actually going on.
I did, and I was not comfortable talking about it, and have never talked about it publicly until just now. And just the spur of the moment he happened to call and ask this question, I'm glad he did, because it's something I've been planning on perhaps discussing later on, because I think it's going – they've already sort of taken steps to start talking about it publicly anyway. In a way that, you know, I think it's calculated to not make a big deal of it. It'll be something like, oh, yeah, you know, 10 years from now, we'll know, just like we did about some other, you know, previous projects, that, yeah, they were doing this, and it was for a good cause, and blah, blah. Now, I do happen to believe, based on my assessments of it, what I'd be able to determine, that it is not, and here's another of the problems, is that people who go and Google chemtrail are going to find a lot of outlandish stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that is clearly organic, as in some of it is. It has to do with the fact that there are a lot of people who are interested in these things. Sometimes are not able to put on the brakes. Sometimes are not able to differentiate between demonstrable evidence and, you know,
using discernment
and just fantasy.
Right.
And so that scares away people. And then even those journalists who look at it and say, "Oh yeah, this probably is true." There's nothing. There's no money in pushing the line. There's no money in exposing yourself to the idea of being a conspiracy theorist. Now, luckily, I've got a lot of currency in the bank. I've got a National Magazine Award now. I've got, you know, I've been right about a lot of things, and that's been acknowledged. So now I feel comfortable talking about it, especially because we can make the case, because these documents are not, you know, they're hidden, but they're out there. I mean, there are patents, there are news reports, and there's confirmations of the video. So it's important to me, because it does speak to these larger issues of, can they do something literally above our heads for 10 years and rely upon the press to be too incompetent to pursue it?
And that is, you know, and that's the sad state. Nathan and I were talking during the break about effective journalism today and how it is just quite simply lacking out there. And where do people go for honest journalism these days? They have to go and dig for it. It's not given to them, you know. And that's where we are at. And that's why we need more bare browns.
And that's the problem, because people are out there looking for it. And there's new alternative sources now, you know, more than ever. And a lot of them, you know, many of them are just not equipped to really take that burden up. Some of them are even worse than the major outlets in terms of being credulous, or whatever. So it is difficult, and that makes it's a vicious cycle, because then these new outlets come about, they get shown to be silly in many cases, and that helps to discredit all of them. And so it means that the Washington Post and all that, publications that have not done a great job themselves, you know.
Okay, let's go to Wild Card.
False dichotomy. This is a false dichotomy between independent journalism and mainstream press. That is less nuanced than it needs to be. The nuance is, you know, these are all structures, these are all institutions. They are subject to all kinds of difficulties, and not that much of it is really propaganda. Not that much of it is actual control by, you know, intelligence outlets. Very little of it is these days, in my opinion, compared to the Cold War. But they don't need to set up vast apparatuses for propaganda and manipulation of the news. All they need to do is to rely upon the fact that we have a lot of low-end thinkers and careerists taking up positions as journalists, as editors, and as news producers.
Well, they've done it to themselves, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's go to Wild Card. Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. You're up next on Coast.
Thank you very much, Jimmy and Barrett. I'm amazed that you would be on tonight. So much is happening that surrounds the Julian Assange issue. I can never say his name quite right. You remember that meeting with Donald Jr. and the Russian lawyer, Natalia,
yeah.
A very hard name to say, Veselnitskaya.
I couldn't say that either, yes.
Yeah, that meeting took place just 3 days before Julian Assange released those hacked emails of the Clinton campaign. Now, here's the interesting thing. We have just heard that Michael Cohen says that Donald Trump knew about that meeting in advance. Now, here's why this is extremely significant for Coast to Coast members. If Donald Trump knew about it in advance, that would be natural. If he didn't, that would be very unnatural. The issue was money laundering. And the Magnitsky Act that Natalia, the Russian lawyer, wanted to get erased, that act only applied to 18 people.
Okay, well, Michael, let me get to your point here before we run out of time.
Okay, listen.
Well, I've got 1 minute. I'm just letting you know.
Okay.
You can answer.
Those 18 people included Vladimir Putin. They were all Russians. They were all billionaires. Now, the Magnitsky Act prevents them from laundering money, as they were attempting to do, into Manhattan real estate.
Okay, well, we're out of time. I ask you to get to the point.
Well, let me speak to that.
Okay.
First of all, I enjoy how he sounds like kind of William Burroughs. I kind of like this.
Yeah.
He's absolutely right about these things. That's surprisingly insightful. He's absolutely correct. A lot of what has happened vis-a-vis U.S. and Russia has to do with the necessity of the Russian oligarchy to get their money secured. And so they had an interest in dealing with Trump and the people around him in order to see if that could be facilitated. And so, yeah, and WikiLeaks is at least tangentially involved in this. There was some, I think there's going to be some things that will come out, even aside from the FBI, even aside from the CIA, even aside from the case they put on. I've spoken to some journalists who are very close to this and who I trust, and I believe that there's a reason that I have broken with Assange on some things, and it's so some of it's based on publicly available knowledge. Some of it's personal communications that I've had that have gone into a little bit before. But there's a great deal here.
When was the last time you were in contact with Julian?
Well, we've never spoken directly. We've had generally just mundane like messages. Passing a lot of messages. Like when I got out of prison, the day I got out of prison, he conveyed to me that they have a surprise for me the next day, and that was they released, they put the H.P. Gary emails, the original major data set we're looking into, on WikiLeaks, and that was a big thing for me because we had had that up on a server that one of the anonymous volunteers put up, but it had gone down over and over again. Like people just weren't able to maintain it. It was just, for mundane reasons, it was not easily searchable, and I wanted it to be just perpetually available so there could be links to in articles and research further, because there were 70,000 emails, and we did what we could to go through them and find out what was important in them, but there's still stuff there. And so, and then more recently, when I started criticizing Assange over the communications with Trump Jr., and a few other things, there was a couple times in which they reached out to me and said, oh, he wants to talk to you and explain, and then did not follow through, which tells me that he didn't really have an explanation that, you know, there's certain people he can lie to that will accept that, and I'm not one of them. So
how much control does he have over WikiLeaks? He doesn't have any internet access, right?
Well, he has had internet access cut off officially.
Right.
He has always had people, visitors, just like, you know, I was in prison, but was able to convey messages and have them put out, you know. He is in as absolute control as it's possible to have over an organization. He's had that control, and we know a lot about that. Not just those of us who you know people involved. You know, we have a lot of messages. In fact, a couple hours ago, another 11,000 PM sort of direct messages between Assange and several close supporters were released a few hours ago, and. Before that, we've had other messages. So we have insight. The public has insight into the degree of control he had over WikiLeaks, and he is in control.
Why isn't it possible? This is going to have to be a quick question, quick answer. Why isn't it possible with all of the power of the NSA? And the Department of the Navy and Air Force, that they just can't shut down WikiLeaks. Why do, or Russia, for that matter?
Well, what that requires is something that's beyond the purview of just technology. As in, WikiLeaks, you know, was set up by Assange, who is a person who is a very clever technology user. And who has very resourceful friends and associates, and always has. And it's very hard to shut down anything on the internet. It's easy. It is within their powers to infiltrate things and to discredit things and to, you know, engage in different kinds of attacks. We foiled a few. That H.P. Gary Team Themis thing. You know, they're planning on doing certain kinds of attacks against WikiLeaks on behalf of Bank of America.
Well, let's. I got to take a break right here, Barrett. Amazing conversation tonight. Sunday on Coast to Coast, Barrett Brown. We'll be right back. Stay with us.